And welcome back. The Cathedral Basilica in St. Louis will be the scene of what should be a remarkable recital tomorrow night. Two virtuoso giants blend their talents in launching the St. Louis Cathedral Concert Series, performing individually and together. Both have international reputations. Grammy Award-winning Christine Brewer is considered one of the finest sopranos in the world. She is a local product, having been born and raised in Southern Illinois. Organist Paul Jacobs, who chairs the Department of Organ at the Juilliard School of Music, has been called America's leading organ performer. He is the first organist ever to have won a Grammy Award. They are not strangers and recently collaborated on the new CD, Divine Redeemer. I am pleased to welcome them in studio. It's so nice to have you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Good to be here.
You know, I think of what the sound is going to be like Wednesday at the Cathedral Basilica with the power of your voice, Christine, and all the power of your instrument. You're going to rock the place. There's no question about it. I'm sure you're looking forward to it. Christine, I'll start with you. What brought the two of you together?
Well, we did a couple of performances of Janáček's Glagolitic Mass, and it has an organ solo in the middle of the piece. I've sung this piece all over the world, so I've sung it with a lot of different organists. But when I heard Paul play that solo, I remember turning around and thinking, okay, who is this guy? It was amazing. And we just really hit it off. We were in Chicago with the Chicago Symphony, and we had dinner one night, some drinks and dinner after the performance. And I think you brought up the idea of maybe collaborating on a recording, and one thing led to another. And I said, oh, I'd love to do that. Because my early career, I did lots of stuff with organ. My first voice teacher was an organist. And so I did lots of this repertoire. And then we put this project together, and Paul said, well, how about we do a recital tour as well? So there we go.
Yeah.
That's how it started.
I have to say that's exactly how it happened. And we organists just crave any opportunity to work with other musicians. Sometimes our instrument can be a little bit lonely, but the organ is maybe the most unnatural of instruments because it's so complicated, it's so mechanical. And to coax sensitive, expressive music from this machine is a great challenge, where on the other hand, you have the human voice, which is the most natural. It's an instrument embedded within the human person. So these two instruments working together is a real thrill.
How do you work that out? I mean, it is a powerful instrument, and you have a powerful voice, but one could overtake the other, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's very easy for organists to push down the gas pedal too much. And especially even though Christine has one of the most marvelous voices in the world, it would be possible to overwhelm her voice with this organ. Yeah. It is a powerful instrument in the Basilica.
And from your standpoint, Christine, how about that? I mean, is that something you worry about? Is it something you have to really rehearse?
Well, we do. We have to rehearse. You know, we just did our first leg of the tour in Atlanta at Spivey Hall. And as Paul pointed out to me, each instrument in each venue we go to will be different. Mm-hmm. The instrument will be different. The room will be different. The acoustic will be different. So he's taking a day or two at each venue rehearsing alone, and then I come in and join him, and we tweak things, and he'll say, do you like this stop? Do you like this registration? Yeah, I think that sounds great. Then we try it, and then we'll have someone out in the audience sort of listening and saying, okay, that sounds, the balance is good. But it's hard. I mean, it's a tricky thing, but I trust Paul.
And I trust you, Christine.
Have you been over to the Basilica yet?
Yes. In fact, I spent many hours yesterday preparing the organ for our rehearsal today. And organs are very different to each instrument.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's not much standardization. And one of the challenges with the great organ in the Basilica is that there are different divisions of the organ scattered around the building. So I have to figure out in making crescendos and decrescendos how to bring in each division at any given moment. It's a special challenge.
Do you use the same repertoire? You're going to another several cities front. Is the same repertoire everywhere?
Yes. Yeah. And not all of most of the music we're doing in the recital is on the recording we did, but we added a couple things to the recital that aren't on the recording. So I said, we'll just do volume two of a recording later.
That's right.
Something for us all to look forward to. Let's listen to, to some of what you've done together. I'll leave it to you to decide which one we'll do first. We have a number of selections here. We've got Bach and Puccini.
How about a little bit of the Bach? The Bis Du Bei Mir is a really familiar piece. Probably people have heard this at weddings or...
Yeah, that'd be wonderful.
Let's listen to a bit of it. Is beautiful, but the sound engineer really has his work cut out for him. You can see that.
I mean, we recorded this in Milwaukee at the Church of the Jesu, because I let Paul choose. I said, you know the organs around America, and this was a lovely place where we could record at night. But that first night that we recorded, I mean, we spent a long time just trying to get the right sound, get the microphones in the right place to pick up the ambiance of the room, and it was tricky.
Oh, yeah. Every recording engineer that I have met who knows a bit about classical music will say that the organ is by far the hardest instrument to capture. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's an instrument that is part of the architecture, and often there's a considerable amount of reverberation in these rooms. And how do you capture... of course, the organ and the room. And of course, now we have Christine. So it's another level of complexity. I think that this engineer did a stunning job, mm-hmm. and the producer just putting this together.
What is the status of the organ today? I don't want to say it's an obscure instrument. It's not that, but it's not the first one you think of when you think of today's music.
No, that's very true. Sometimes the organ is on the periphery of classical music, and that's something that, in my own modest way, I'm trying to build a bridge to. And this kind of collaboration with Christine certainly enables me to do that. I encourage my students at Juilliard to reach out to other musicians. There's a lot of chamber music that involves organ, and I think that young composers are eager to explore any kinds of options. So there are a lot of reasons to be encouraged when I look at my own students and what some younger organists are doing. We are broadening the horizons in a good way.
Part of the problem, if I can use that word, is that it's difficult to pick one up and carry it to the next gig, right? That's a little difficult.
Well, it is part of the problem, but in a way it's also a blessing because it forces musicians to always keep interpretations fresh. It forces organists to explore and reconsider music that they know so well on a different instrument. Mm-hmm. And then there's just the thrill of playing in a place like the Cathedral Basilica. I mean, it's incredible.
Well, I think it must also be like a conductor going to a different orchestra in a different hall to conduct a piece that maybe he or she has conducted for many years. But there's going to be a different sound. And the organ is so much like an orchestra because you've got all these different possibilities for colors and instruments. And I don't play the organ, but I must imagine it must be very powerful feeling to have that under your fingers and your feet and to be able to do that. And And like you said, every room you go to, every instrument's different. So it's a challenge, but it keeps it fresh.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, it does. Yeah.
And how does that work for the vocalist?
For me as well. I mean, because each room is different. And it's true for me when I sing with different orchestras and different Severance Hall in Cleveland is one of the most beautiful places to sing. But then there are some halls that are difficult to sing in. And for me, I just have to sing the way I sing and then trust that the acoustic will take the voice and let it go and trust also that the people in the audience understand their hall. The Barbican in London is not one of the best, kindest halls to sing in. But people who go there regularly are aware of that and, you know, they're sort of used to it, I think.
Yeah. Paul, do you feel, I know you have some thoughts in this area, but do you feel that classical music is getting lost today, in today's world?
Oh, very much so. It's something that I think Christina and I both think about a great deal. And yes, I'm deeply concerned about the role of classical music in our lives and art and beauty in general, and how we've become oftentimes desensitized to it, indifferent to it. And in part, I would say that the school systems have sucked music education out of the curriculum, has done incalculable damage to the cause. And I think many musicians today and orchestras and other institutions are filling the void with outreach programs, which is very noble. But it's not the same thing as it is it just kind of enveloping the students on a daily basis in the school systems?
Yeah, I'm when I was in school, I was able to play in the orchestra, sing in the chorus. There was a band. There were lots of opportunities. There music appreciation. And a lot of these things have gone by the wayside because of budget cuts and school boards who don't see the importance of music. Even if they would just look at the statistics and see that kids who study music are also going to be better readers, they're going to be better at mathematics. And they just, well, if you lose that culture too, it's just, it's damaging to the society, I think.
Well, they're taking the humanities out of the core curriculum these days.
Yeah.
You know, it's unfortunate. So many things are getting lost.
Yeah.
I'd like to learn a little bit more about each of you, and then we'll get back to the music part of it. I've always wondered, Christine, I've heard you many, many times on this radio station. Probably get this question a lot, but how does a young woman from Southern Illinois wind up being one of the top 20 sopranos in the world?
I don't know. Everybody in my family sang. My mom had a beautiful voice and sang in a jazz gospel trio. My brothers sang. We always sang at church. And I played the violin. I really thought I would be a music teacher, and that's what I studied. And I went to McKendree College over in Lebanon, Illinois, and got my degree as a music in music education, and continued to take voice lessons. But while I taught school, I was a late bloomer, so it wasn't until my late 20s it started to kind of develop, and people said, "Oh, you know, you might want to try doing some opera." And so it just kind of came about in I feel like I went through the back door, you know. But I think it's okay because my voice was healthy and. And it was good for me to teach, and it was good for me to have something else before I got to this. But some of my family still—they wondered, you know, when I said I was singing opera, they said, "You're singing at the Grand Old Opry," and you know, it was, and so that's been a little funny. But yeah, that's how it all kind of came about.
You know, it's one thing to sing in the shower and say I used to sing as a kid.
Right.
It's another thing to discover that you have a voice.
Right,
and you were part of the St. Louis Symphony Chorus.
I sang in the chorus. Yeah. I was one of their paid section leaders and then sang at the Opera Theater in the chorus. And that's really where I started watching the lead opera singers and thinking, okay, I think I could do that. Yeah. And then getting mentorship from people like Colin Graham and Richard Gaddis, and they helped send me to the good coaches and teachers. So it was really, really wonderful.
You can't do it alone, can you?
No. Yeah. I always tell young singers, you need to have a team, and that team can be your voice teacher, it can be your doctor, it can be your husband, your spouse, but it's you've got to have a team who can help support you.
Paul, how about your start? Why the organ? Why not the guitar, like most young men and women?
I'm not sure I could answer why. It's a rather mysterious process, but I come from a very small town in southwestern Pennsylvania called Washington. Pittsburgh is the closest city. And I did not grow up in a musical family, but I was very fortunate in that small town to have a first-rate piano and organ teacher and a few other mentors who were just very supportive of my own interests and devotion to music. And it was I guess it was about 5 or 6 years old, I began piano lessons. We had a little upright in the house. And it was going to church that I, of course, encountered the organ and would little by little drop enough courage to visit the organist as she played the postlude each week. I'd walk up the gallery stairs and Sister Helen would be playing the organ. In retrospect, she was a terrible organist. but that's where it all started. And little by little, my love grew.
I'll bet you never told Sister Helen she was a bad organist.
I never told her that. That's
you right. Get those knuckles wrapped pretty hard with that ruler if you try that. Let's listen to some more music for a moment. I want to take it in a different direction when we come back, but why don't you pick the one you'd prefer to hear next? Of the three we have.
Okay. Well, this is a toccata by the German composer Max Reger. It's just a wild, colorful piece.
And we are back with Christine Brewer and Paul Jacobs. Paul, don't be offended by what I'm going to say, but I always think of two things when I hear the organ play. One is church.
Mm-hmm.
The other is silent movies.
Okay.
Yeah. Really, it got quite a workout back in the 20s and before that. Didn't
oh, yeah, you didn't say funeral parlors. That would have offended me.
No, not really.
Really.
No, over at the Fox Theater here, they used to do that.
It's a tremendous art, actually, the theater organ playing, which still exists, and there's some excellent theater organists out there. But I think that we should never underestimate the role that the organ has played for 1,000 years in a sacred setting. Mm-hmm. And I'm all for experiencing the organ in secular settings as well, in concert halls, et cetera. And we see those instruments increasingly.
Mm-hmm. One other area I wanted to get to in the limited time that we have for our discussion today is the area of young people. Christine, I know this is something that you're very much involved with. What is it, the opera?
Tunities.
Opportunities.
Yeah.
Yes. And tomorrow, you'll be, before the event at the Basilica, mm-hmm. you'll be meeting with a number of kids. Tell us about that.
We've got about 800 kids coming tomorrow.
From all over the state.
All over the state and from Illinois.
Of course.
The little group from Marissa, Illinois, they're riding the school bus up and... my 2-year-old grandson is also coming. He's very excited to hear the organ, and I think they're listening today to the show. So hello, Oscar. I know he's going to be excited to hear. He hears the organ in his church, but to hear it at this organ at the Basilica will be thrilling for these kids. We've got about 800 kids coming from all over the state and from the city, and this will be a great experience. And we'll do a sort of shortened version of our recital and probably have a few questions and answers for the kids as well, which will be good.
And Paul, your role in this is to explain how this instrument of yours works, right?
Yes, in 30 seconds or less.
Yes,
so we'll see.
Well, how does it work?
Well, it's a wind and a keyboard instrument. We have a blower which produces the air, and the air sits underneath the pipes until an organist pulls a stop that admits the wind to rest under the rank of pipes until an organist presses a key. A little valve opens, and the pipe speaks.
We used to have one at home when I was growing up, and it was with a kind of a bellows thing. You'd pump it with your feet. It was an antique organ.
Yeah, a harmonium or a reed organ, and they're still in existence.
We've got one in my dining room. And at Thanksgiving, I play a few hymns, really fun, yeah.
Give us some sense, Christine, of what the what's on the program for tomorrow night.
Well, we're doing, really, it's varied. We've got some Baroque music, we've got some Bach, some Handel. We've got some Hugo Wolf songs, which I had no idea had been set for organ. I'd sung them as a student with piano, and Paul said Max Reger set them for the organ. So we're doing some of those. We're doing some Gounod pieces, which are really the ones I think people will know, his Ave Maria and his O Divine Redeemer. So there'll be familiar things and some things that I think, some Boulanger pieces from the Boulanger sisters in France that maybe are a little unknown.
Yeah, you'll be performing together and also separately. You're going to solo, obviously.
Yeah, there'll be a few solo organ works. But in Atlanta, we performed this program for the first time, and we were both so pleased with how it unfolded.
Well, I'm sure it's going to be great. Christine, have you been over to the Basilica yet? Have you tried out the acoustics and what have you?
I've sung there before, but it's been a few years, so we're going to do that after the rehearse this afternoon.
I would think the acoustics over there would be quite extraordinary.
Oh, they're excellent. Yeah. Beautiful.
Oh, something to look forward to. That's all happening tomorrow night. Let me get my notes here to point out that Christine Brewer, Paul Jacobs at the St. Louis Cathedral Concerts presents these two at 8 o'clock at the Cathedral Basilica tomorrow evening. It's going to be quite a night, and the kids are going to love it.
I think so.
Thank you both so much for being with us. Have a wonderful evening tomorrow night.
Thanks. Thank you, Don.
And tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll take a look at the blossoming local food movement in St. Louis and the impact that it's had on two farmers markets as well as one farmer. We'll also hear the most recent installment of the We Live Here podcast, examining public school funding inequities in Missouri. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.